This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit menstclinic.com.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105 Through the Fan. We're live from Globe Life Field where the doors are open, getting ready for Rangers and Blue Jays. But right now on the D&M Leasing Hotline, we bring to you Emmy Award winner and now DraftKings NFL Network analyst. It is Trey Wingo. Good afternoon, sir.
Hey, how are you guys?
We're doing really well. We'll try to keep this conversation less emotional than last week, so that's what we'll go with to start. But
all good.
There is, as you can probably guess, this is a game with the Cowboys and the Ravens where it feels like both teams are coming into this game with quite a bit of panic in them.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, you know, just let's start from the Ravens side. They have aspirations of getting to the Super Bowl, and I'm sure the Cowboys do too, but we can talk about that in a second. But here's the grand list in the history of the Super Bowl era of teams that have started 0-3 and have gone on to win the Super Bowl. Zero.
Oh.
It's never happened.
Yep.
As you guys know, the Cowboys of 93 were the first team to go 0-2 and win the Super Bowl. That was when Emmitt Smith was holding out. And then 2001 Patriots with Tommy Brady filling in for Drew Bledsoe in 2001, and then the Giants in 07. So that's it. So for the Ravens, you know, historically their season is not going to go the way they want it to if they don't come out of this game with a win. And the Cowboys need to find this interesting thing called home field advantage, right?
No kidding.
Just think about it. Last season they extended the second longest home winning streak in franchise history to 16 straight games. Last season alone, they had the highest point differential at home in the NFL, the best turnover differential at home in the NFL. And then in their last two home games, the wild card loss to the Packers, and obviously what happened on Sunday, they've given up 40 points in back-to-back games. So whatever mojo the Cowboys had is out the door.
Trey, last time we talked with you, you mentioned a friend of ours, a friend of yours, maybe the best dude we know, Darren Woodson. And we discussed yesterday, Kevin, the credentials of Travis Frederick in the Hall of Fame. But we've told Darren many times that we are gladly leading the campaign for his Hall of Fame induction. Would you like to join us by giving your pitch for Darren Woodson in the Hall of Fame?
He absolutely belongs in the Hall of Fame, and also I'm rooting for him because he told me he would help. He would let me be one of his presenters.
So yes.
Would very much love for Darren to be in the Hall of Fame. Look, what else do you need to say except these things? He's a part of three Super Bowl championships, and he's the leading tackler in the history of the Dallas Cowboys franchise.
Yes.
Now, this is not the Carolina Panthers, okay? This is not the Jacksonville Jaguars, nor the Tennessee Titans / Houston Oilers. This is the Dallas frickin' Cowboys. And you're talking about a guy who's the leading tackler in the history of that organization. Those credentials alone put him in the Hall of Fame. I have no idea what people are looking for or waiting for.
Man,
we'll take
that
clip and we will submit it to the group that's voting on it this year, because he belongs for sure, man.
Now, for obvious reasons, we're hoping that the Saints are actually really, really, really good.
Yeah.
I know the offense has been going wild in these first 2 weeks. What do you make of the Saints, not only in the first 2 weeks, but their prospects for the season?
Well, it's interesting, right? They put up 91 points in their first two games. And just to put some historical context on that, the last two teams to score 90 or more points in their first two games of the regular season, both went on to win the Super Bowl that year. The 09 Saints, who won Super Bowl 44, and the 1971 Cowboys, who went on to win Super Bowl 6. And in those first two games, guys, remember, they were shuffling quarterbacks between Roger Staubach and Craig Morton that year. And just weirdly historical here, that year they started 4-3 with the shuffle, and finally they said, pick one, and they stuck with Roger, and they went on to win the championship that year.
It's a good decision. Good decision.
Seems like it was the right one, yeah. All right, so this is that.
I would agree.
Trey, this seems like the year, at the moment at least, in the first couple of games here, of the reclamation quarterback of Derek Carr, Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield. Yeah. Which one's not a real human, but which one's real and can keep this up all season?
Well, you know, I always think Derek has been a little underrated and underappreciated. But I'm just, for me as a fan of football, I'm just excited for Baker because here was a guy who was left for dead, right? I mean, he set the single-season rookie touchdown pass record in Cleveland in 2018 and then went sideways. He got a little hurt. All things went crazy. Then he bounced around between Carolina and the Rams and really sort of found himself last season in Tampa Bay. And now he's got a real home, I think. He leads the NFL in touchdown passes this year. And it's just nice to see a kid, and he's still a kid, you know, let's not kid ourselves here. He's still a young man that has been through a lot early on in his career and has found a way to come out sort of on the other side of it. And, you know, he has a quality Hall of Fame wide receiver in Mike Evans, and Chris Godwin's playing well, and that defense is playing well. I'm really happy for Baker that he sort of flipped the narrative on what's going on. For Sam, you know, maybe let's see. We'll see how it plays out. Obviously, having Justin Jefferson, and you can hoist up a 97-yard touchdown pass to him.
Yes.
Helps as they did last week. But, you know, Derek has always been consistent. He hasn't been flashy. But for Baker has turned the narrative. Like, people look at Baker differently. After his rookie season in 2018, you know, 2019-2020, we were like, I don't know, man. I'm not sure. And he's flipped the script. And you always like to see somebody do that. So I think I would be the most in on Baker at this point.
You know, all three of those quarterbacks, and we discuss this, I think, every year there's a new version of it. They all, you could say, franchise or the organization or coaching, whatever, could be at blame there. With Bryce Young, what you're looking at with him and his troubles and the Panthers' troubles, where do you place that blame? Coaching, organization, the player himself?
Well, let's start Baker. Let's just start. Bryce has not played well, right? We can all agree to that. There are reasons for that. Like look at, for example, look at what the Texans did with C.J. Stroud. Okay, you had Nico Collins, you had Tank Dell. They get Dalton Schultz from the Dallas Cowboys, and he has a phenomenal rookie year. Then what do? They go get Stephon Diggs. They go get Joe Mixon, and they put pieces around him to make him even more successful. Contrast that to what the Panthers have done with Bryce Young. And by the way, the Panthers have this unbelievable history of trading away their best players in their prime.
Yeah.
Whether it's Christian McCaffrey or whether it's DJ Moore, and part of the deal that got them the number one pick to get Bryce Young, or Brian Burns this offseason. Call me crazy, but maybe a good pass rusher on defense would make things a little easier for a quarterback. Now, there are issues with Bryce, and he's just little. You know, he's little in a littler way than Baker was because he's not thick like Baker. But they have given him nothing to work with. This is an organizational failure for me with the Panthers when it comes to Bryce Young. And when I hear people say, well, you know, he's potentially the biggest bust of all time, come on, man. Stop that. What has he been given to work with? It's like, you know, it's like fielding an NBA team with five guys that are under 6 feet. You're not going to have success. So Bryce is part of the problem, but the bigger problem is the Carolina Panthers organization. And dare I say it, David Tepper is starting to make Daniel Snyder look interesting.
Mm. Wow. That's not a category you want to be in for sure. One of the things leading into, yeah, I know you can talk us across the NFL. We've obviously talked a lot of Cowboys, Ravens. Mike has said they're going to try really hard to keep Lamar Jackson in the pocket. Is that the way to go, and is that even possible?
Well, I think everybody tries. I think the Chiefs tried.
Sure.
I think everybody tries. You know, the question is, can you find a way to do it? You know, and if you look over, sometimes the Ravens are their own worst enemy. You go back and look at the AFC Championship game last year. They ran it 16 times when they averaged 31 rushing attempts in the regular season on their way to the number one seed, and they cut that number almost in half. So, you know, and then Lamar does tend to make curious decisions at times, like at the end of that Raiders game. You know, it sure looked to me like he just kept the ball. He had a pretty good chance of scoring. instead of you know, lateraling it back. So I love the idea of trying to keep Lamar in the pocket. Let me just say good luck with that. I mean, everybody tries that. The question is, can you come up with a plan that's going to make you successful doing it?
Now, I know you do a lot of interviews, but yeah. I wanted to see if you wanted to go ahead and say that we're your favorite show that you interview with, and where are you driving to?
Yes, I absolutely. This is my favorite show in the history of interviews. There's no question about that.
Yes, we did
strong, strong Dallas-Fort Worth connections run in my family, absolutely. I'm on my way up to Boston where the DraftKings studios are. We're doing the pregame power-up tonight. 5 o'clock DFW time on DraftKings Network, where we're going to break down the game between the Patriots and the...
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Jets get you set for week 3.
Are you excited for this game in terms of, well, I mean, I'm sure we all get excited for football in general, but just to see more of what the Patriots really are.
Yeah, and let's be honest, what is Aaron Rodgers?
Fair. Right? I mean, that's fair.
He's gone 24 straight games without a 300-yard passing game. That's the longest streak in the NFL. And for the first time in his career, back-to-back passing games under 200 yards. So there are things that we need to see about Aaron Rodgers and whether or not he can still be the Aaron Rodgers that we remember, because that guy has not really surfaced yet for the Jets.
Well, Trey, you've been really supportive of us. We hope everyone goes checks you out on DraftKings. Thank you very much for jumping on with us so much.
Anytime, guys. Just let me know. Cheers. Hey,
absolutely.
Cheers.
There you go. Trey Wingo right here on 105.3 The Fan. I know we talked a lot of NFL there.
Sports.
He's the best. He's awesome. We have some college news to throw out there as well. I forgot to hit this in the last segment. Arch Manning is going to make his first ever college start this weekend. Now, I feel like that a lot of people thought it was going to trend in that direction because Quinn Ewers is week to week, but I'm excited to see it. I don't want Texas to succeed, but that kid was unbelievable in his last game. I want to see him again.
Well, and I think the other thing, I know you don't want him to succeed, but Mike's a fan of quarterbacks. I think you do.
Yeah.
You do find a way to go, man, this player is going to be good in the NFL. And you find a way to look at and watch that and separate it a little from the team, Kevin, from the laundry, if you will. But, yeah, man, as an OU fan, I'm kind of in that same boat, but I'm also going, man, Arch Manning could be that dude.
It'll be interesting because you just brought up OU.
Mm-hmm.
Texas OU, is it like October 11th or 12th, right around that date? That'll be about when they think Quinn Ewers is healthy.
Ooh.
So do they go back? I think that Texas OU game, obviously that isn't coming up this week, but that's approximately when Quinn Ewers gets healthy, and then Sarkisian is going to have, I think, a very tough decision for that OU game.
Do you think that Sark hates this decision, though? I feel like part of him is like, this is great. I could be in a situation where I have crap for quarterbacks, but right now I have to make a decision between two guys that everybody is envious of.
If they lose that OU game, he made the wrong decision.
Oh, yeah, no matter how it goes.
Yeah.
No matter how it goes. But, like, this feels like the exception to the if you have two quarterbacks, you have no quarterbacks rule. No, they have two quarterbacks that, like, most teams would be like, ooh, can I have one of those,
please? Absolutely. Everybody in the country wants at least one of those guys right now for sure. And a main part of it is the way that Sark's calling those plays.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, we move into the expressway after a couple of games. What has been your biggest NFL hit? Go ahead and take credit for being right. But also, it's going to be baseball time in Texas, so we'll talk with Jared Sandler. Jam-packed expressway next right here on The Fan.
Play action for Stroud. Good protection. Loads it up. Fires downfield. Excellent touch. Perfectly delivered. Touchdown, Dalton Schultz. Stroud strikes again for 37 yards.
KNC Masterpiece back here on 105.3 The Fan. We're live from Globe Life Field. I just want to address that promo really quick because it played earlier too. I want to try to eliminate any confusion. That promo is wrong. We're at Buffalo Wild Wings in Frisco tomorrow off of Preston. Buffalo Wild Wings in Frisco
if anybody's
off
listening,
of Preston tomorrow. Spread the word.
Because we sometimes struggle at those when we especially go Dallas.
Yeah.
Grand Prairie, Arlington, Fort Worth, we do great. But we're playing the wrong one. So if anybody's listening, we are playing the wrong one.
All right, we'll get it fixed. We'll reach out. Who do I reach out to?
I think you should probably know that. Now, on the front of a question that Corey came up with that I thought was a great question. Over the first 2 weeks of the NFL season, what's been your biggest hit? Like, this is your opportunity to take credit for being right. Tomorrow we might address the other side, but this is your chance right now. What has been your biggest NFL hit thus far? I know it's only 2 weeks, but you can be like, oh, yeah, I called that. Mm-hmm. I knew that was going to happen. Now, if you say it's Sam Darnold, I'm going to be really proud of you. I did not. But I'm going to go back to C.J. Stroud and the fact that the Texans are continuing to roll.
I will stick with you on that one. We have been all over the Texans, and so far they've been good enough to win. You know, like, they haven't dominated their opponent in any way yet, but they've been good enough to get the win so far. And C.J. Stroud still looks like he has control over the game. That's one of the ones that I've definitely landed on, and I was like, man, this is going to be right. The other one, and I think we all knew this, anybody can run in the San Francisco 49ers system as you're seeing Jordan Mason do whatever he wants to do right now. So that's definitely...
Feels like the opposite of our team.
Yeah, exactly. Well, again, and Mike, we talked about it with... You talked about it with brought us off air a little bit yesterday to try and get an idea of what's going on with that running game. And I think what I described yesterday about their inability to get push and how we're still just not, we don't have elite run blockers at this moment, except for maybe Tyler Smith. That's about it right now.
Yeah.
That has to get going. But, yeah, I'm going to stick with Stroud and the anybody can run in the Niners system. Having McCaffrey allows you to get those big breakaway bombs that are just a little bit different.
I didn't think Bryce Young was a bad pick at the draft at number one. I did like Stroud better, but I could see the 50-50 debate. But it's early. There's still time for Bryce Young, as Trey Wingo just said, to get better and be a starting quarterback in the NFL that people rely on and trust. But he just looks too little. Even Trey Wingo's like, it's really tough to see a slot receiver. I know he didn't say this, but he really is.
Yeah.
He's a little slot receiver playing quarterback in the NFL, and it is very tough at that size to play that position.
Now, there's some interesting answers already from the 214. Kyler Murray, I mean, what a phenomenal start to the season he's had. I love Kyler Murray. I want him to succeed just because I've seen him ever since he was a sophomore in high school play. I would not have predicted this start. And I know they got caught in the first game, but he's played really well to start.
Yeah, and his connection with Marvin Harrison Jr. looked really good for one quarter. I want to see. I want to see
a
more
hell of a
it.
Quarter. Hell of a quarter.
It feels. I mean, we. That was the thing that I would. I think every prognosticator out there that thought Marvin Harrison Jr. would be good, they all said he's the most pro-ready receiver right now.
Yeah,
and he looks like it. He looks the part. All the catches that he made in that game look like pro catches. So it's good to see that. That's also something you're starting to see a lot more as these rookies get in the league and be immediate impacts. But Kyler definitely is one of those that if you had that one right to start, man, it's looking good right now for sure.
So I don't see it on the log of this text because these texts only go back so far. But we can usually see, like, the last couple of days. From the 817, I do remember somebody texting in something like this. from the 817 that Tua losing weight could potentially get him concussed again. Because remember, we talked about the jiu-jitsu and judo training he went through the year before to fall better, and he was like, hey, I think I can get a little faster, drop a little weight. I definitely remember somebody texting in and saying, I think that could lead to another concussion, which is very sad.
I would love to know then also a little more about that, because did you think the weight was absorbing some, or did you think him being able to run would be him actually taking off and running? Because that play specifically, that had that, like, that the way his neck went, it was all because he didn't slide. Like, everything about that was because of that. But I'm interested to know, do they think that because of his weight would absorb a little more of that whenever it came to the concussions part?
Rex Ryan said this. Not that I'm the biggest fan of his breakdowns on ESPN. He said, you have to teach these quarterbacks when they're doing that. They don't even have to slide feet first. You have to dive at the defenseman's ankle.
Yeah.
If you do that, if you dive at their ankle, they have to protect themselves. They have to protect their ankles and their knees. So, yeah, if you don't feel comfortable sliding feet first, you know, he didn't say this. If you're not a baseball player, Kyler Murray, Patrick Mahomes, these guys are baseball players. They know how to slide feet first. Dak doesn't know how to.
Yeah, it's
tough. He never played baseball. So it's like,
it's uncomfortable.
I've never done this. I don't know how to do this. I didn't play the sport where they teach this. Well, if you dive at the ankles of the player in front of you, they have to give themselves up, and then they just touch you, and the play's over. And they call you dead anyways as a quarterback diving. But, you know, Tua doesn't even know how to do that.
Kevin, you were all over, and rightfully so, the DeMarvion Overshown's going to be a star. Have you been proven right, or is there still we got more to see? Because they're not throwing him out there against the big packages.
Yeah, because I would say it's a split decision. He looked great in the first game, and then in the second game, I think you saw a big part of what he's not and why he wasn't a first-round pick. Because you're not going to have him in there against the heavy packages because he can get pushed back. And so as much as I would love to claim that I got that right, the other claim I was going to make, not a shocking claim, but that the Giants and Panthers would outpace everyone in looking like the absolute crappiest teams in football.
Oh, my gosh, dude. It's...
They did it.
They did it.
You know, you Patriots, where are you at, man?
Man, the Patriots straight away were like, not today.
If Andy Dalton steps in and takes them on a tear, then he's the greatest organizer of sports I've ever seen. Because when I watched the Panthers play, it's not just Bryce Young falling apart. I see guys not making their blocks. I see receivers going the wrong directions. I see it just looks like sloppy football play. And that's where that lands. And that's the same thing with the Giants. Actually, more than sloppy football play, it's like, hey, we got Malik Nabers. Maybe Daniel Jones can throw it to him. Other than that, we're not sure we have good football players on the field.
From the 469, some of these are bolder takes. The Rams being 0-2, this person called that. I would not have called that at all. And then to go along with this, we said, what are you right about so far? I'll give them credit. I still think this is not going to work. From the 972, the Steelers over-under wins was 7.5. I said 10 wins before the season started. Right now, they're on pace for that. I still don't
believe. They're on pace for 10 wins?
They're
on pace for 17.
That is true. They're on pace to reach that goal. I have some trepidation about it.
Okay. I'll tell you what, that's an easy bet. Doesn't Mike Tomlin always win 8 or more games?
He does.
Right there.
I'll give you two that I had.
That you were right about?
One that I was really right about and one that I was really wrong about.
Save the wrong one for tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll get the wrong one tomorrow.
Who said you should bet on Aiden Hutchinson to win Defensive Player of the Year?
You definitely do. And I think about this for most of the year.
You were looking at the value of
The value.
With Bobby Witt and Gunnar Henderson.
Yeah, I'm going to
lose
those.
Before the season started, you talked about them as MVP sleepers, and they look like they're going to finish, you know, second and fourth or second and third. But, yeah, they're going to be right up there. And for the value, I definitely think it was worth it. And you definitely asked, hey, what's that like? Because we were like, hey, this is 5-1. It's 7-2. Aiden was closer to like 14 or 15-1. And you said, hey, isn't that worth a look at that money? And so far, it definitely feels like that was worth a look.
From the 903, I knew Trayvon Diggs would come back and be himself. So far, He has the interception. That looks like himself. That play that he gave up to Chris Olave, though, the wide open slant across the middle that just turned into a big play.
Did he think the safety was going to break off with Olave?
I think part of that. And then the other part, you know, he does like to give space so that he can set up a quarterback. I think he was given a little space, and he didn't realize that Olave was going to take off that way. But right before that play, they did call a timeout because they saw something that made them go, we can make a play on this, and then they absolutely delivered for it.
You know, that's a good one. And Trey Wingo brought up something that has kind of hammered this home. For the 806, I said Aaron Rodgers is washed. It could change, but he hasn't looked good yet. The fact that he said 24 straight games without a 300-yard passing game, that is pretty astonishing to me.
Especially for a guy that is able to orchestrate the way he does. You know, Brady was talking so much about Dak's ability to orchestrate at the line. I've always thought Aaron Rodgers is just a master chess player at that. He gets back there and he just sets it all up. He seems so patient. I think they might be right. What the guy does with his mind and the way he sets it up there, the arm, I think, is maybe washed. He doesn't quite have the same touch that he's always had, the ability to get it down the field fast. You know, Mike, speed on the ball matters so much with these tight windows in the NFL, and I just don't see it with Aaron Rodgers. There's some times when I'm looking at Dak going, oh, my gosh, he needs that ball could have gotten there a lot faster, and it just didn't for whatever reason.
Yeah, I think in the NFL, touch and speed are so important. Where
velocity,
in college, that's where you can get away with it. That's why you can watch guys in college go, well, how come they can't be good in the NFL? And it was brought up earlier with Babe Loftenberg. He was talking about Steve Walsh. Steve Walsh, unbelievable at Miami. The problem is everything was just so slow in the air. There was just the arm strength of, can you zip it into these tight NFL windows? That's where kind of that college quarterback, and I know you're talking about Aaron Rodgers 20 years or so into his career. But
Corey, I need you to decide, since you're the decider of shout-outs, if this is allowable.
I'll tell you what. We're on the road today.
We are.
This man.
We've been in three different locations today.
Yeah, he came all the way to where we are in order to get this one off. So I will allow it.
I'm a Fort Worth firefighter. He typed this out on his phone to show us. And I was wondering if you could give my coworkers a shout out. His name is Anderson Verrett. Is it Smatter? No. Okay. Anderson Verrett. Oh, so much for the. Yeah, I got you. Okay, so there you go. Shout out right there. I hope we got it. I hope he appreciates the effort that you put in to make that happen. Now, Corey, I know there was something that you wanted to bring up. We're going to talk with Jared in just a few minutes. All content, no breaks. Something Mel Kiper said this morning, I know, caught your attention. I was actually watching
when this happened. When this went down? Okay.
And he said that the NFL should get rid of the two high safeties. And I believe it was Ryan Clark who tweeted while he was watching this. He goes, hey, I want everyone to know there's an absolutely ridiculous conversation happening on First Take right now. And I appreciated that he was like, no, that's dumb.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Getting rid of two high safeties, forcing the safeties to come down, play in the box, forcing, I guess, the single high safety, which is, like, that would be the ultimate, hey guys, we do not care about defense anymore. We are. I understand where Mel Kiper's coming from. If you are in favor of offense and the quarterback throwing the football downfield, you're not getting it right now. The Cowboys can't do it. Patrick Mahomes is struggling to do it. What has Patrick Mahomes done? Oh, you know what? I'll figure it out underneath, and we'll open up plays that can deliver downfield. But if you're taking those two high safeties away, you are telling everybody that's watching the game, we only care about passing downfield. We're taking something away from defensive coordinators. That's their job, is to create these types of systems that stop the defense. But if you're saying this, Mel Kiper, you're saying the NFL would rather just say, to hell with it. Don't even put a defense out there.
Just for the record, there are other conversations that have been started. Not to say they're happening with the NFL and the NFLPA, but another conversation that's been floating around because of all the field goal stuff we've talked about is either making the crossbar higher or squeezing in the uprights to make field goal kicking more difficult.
They're already missing field goals. I mean,
not very many of them.
There are a lot of them now that are actually doing some amazing stuff there. I don't know. Stop messing with the kicking game. I'd just get rid of it still. That's kind of my approach, but there's jobs out there for guys.
Now, okay, so you're not in favor of that. You're not in favor of that rule change. Mm-mm. All right. Now, real quick, give me cut number six, because I want to throw this out there.
Kept alive by the Stars. Here's Robertson, looks to bank it in. He scores! A hat trick and a 4-3 lead for the Dallas Stars.
Now, Jason Robertson, he's had off-season foot surgery. Word is he's going to miss most of training camp.
Oh, man.
The thought is still he should be there towards the end or at least ready for the regular season. But I wanted to give you a Stars update right there.
His foot's already in a boot. What's the deal?
That's a skate, Mike.
Right.
Yeah, I know, but it kind of is like a boot.
Right now, we're going to bring on Jared Sandler. Now, Jared, you were brought to us, of course, as always, by the lovely Blue Nail Roofing.
Yum. And the Blue Nail Camel. I rode the Blue Nail Camel to get here.
Oh, all right. Appreciate that.
I want to play some audio for you. And essentially, I guess I want to know, why is Major League Baseball so stubborn about changing or not changing replays that is clearly wrong? Let's go to cut number nine. This is the Phillies broadcast being upset about a review.
After review, the call on the field stands. Runners out.
What?
Philadelphia will lose a challenge.
That is unbelievable. What on earth did they see that we didn't see? How is that even possible?
It feels like we go through this a lot. Maybe not just with baseball, but baseball feels particularly headstrong about not overruling their umpires. Do you think that is a fair critique to start?
So that's interesting. I felt that way, but I think they added some measures into the way that they're evaluated that sort of eliminated that. Now, I'm not saying they don't, you know, whatever we just heard, and I'm not sure what they're talking
about. It clearly looked like he missed the tag. They ruled in and out, and they're like, still an out. Now I'm even watching them being like, really?
I do think, so first of all, the pass interference challenge deal we had a few years ago, that was the worst, right? That was that was referees protecting referees.
Yeah.
You literally could, like, jump on someone's back and take their helmet off, and they'd be like, no, that was, like, clean play.
Yeah.
I don't know that I feel like this year there haven't been many. There are a lot of replays where it's like, I think he's out, but the call was safe, and I don't see it getting overturned, right? Because you have to have irrefutable evidence or whatever. There are a lot of those. There haven't been many that I recall where it's like, what the heck are they looking at? The only thing I think of, there are times when it's so obvious what the correct call is, and I don't know why it takes an extra 90 seconds, right?
Yeah.
What do you think?
No, I'm with you. The only thing that I could say that there could be protection, but I'm just trying to follow, is when there's, hey, did they block home plate?
Yeah.
And that became so confusing with the White Sox deal. That's the only play where I think that they could possibly go, we're not changing it. The umpire saw it this way, but safe and out, hit by pitch, you know. The weird one is,
there are a lot of objective. I mean, it's tough to. The thing I'll say is, after the fact, I think in all sports, you know, the NBA kind of undercuts them when they release the, you know, the 2-minute report.
But I agree.
A lot of like what I've never understood is why umpires or officials have such a tough time after the fact saying, you know what, I got that one wrong, because when they double down and triple down on stuff, that always bothers me.
Have you watched the, I think it was an E60 as opposed to a 30 for 30 about the
Jim Joyce?
The should have been perfect game. I mean, I know it doesn't fix anything, but I thought his level of accountability was amazing. I'm sure that he was like, I wish I would have just gotten it right. But I appreciated him like going everywhere and being like, I screwed this kid over.
Yeah. And that's the other thing, too, is, like, the recognition. It's not I screwed up. It's I screwed up for this kid.
Yeah.
Right? I took something away. And
for the game.
I
think those umpires really do love the game that way,
yeah,
too. Maybe not Angel Hernandez, but most of them do.
I did the podcast with Nate Lowe, and it was Nate and, Josh Spores, last episode. We talked about the implementation of the ABS system and Major League Baseball had a meeting with broadcasters that, you know, illuminated some of the findings through the experiments of it. And I asked, this is a position player and a pitcher, and I think if they had their druthers, there wouldn't be any challenge. They would just keep going as is. Now, I think that's those two specifically. I do think there are people who they would like there to be a challenge system, but I don't know anyone who, like, player-wise, who wants it totally automated. And I think there is an understanding that, yeah, in the moment, you might be frustrated that this guy got it wrong. But I don't know, Mike. I mean, you obviously live this, but, like, in conversation with players, it seems like after the fact, when the emotions die down, all they want is, hey, just admit you were wrong, or, like, allow me to have the conversation with you. I'm not going to hold you to a standard of perfection. I get it, but at least, like, don't be a you-know-what about it, like, when you got it wrong. Like, go back. If you saw the pitch was a foot outside, we're seeing the same video. It's okay. Just tell me. I messed it up.
The other day, I think it was Bill Miller. If I get it wrong, I get it wrong. He's older.
Bill Miller, I know.
Right?
Yeah.
He had a bad game in Seattle for the Texas game. He had a bad game, rated a bad game. I'm going to ask you guys, out of his balls and strikes, how many did he get right? Percentage. He had a horrible game.
90%.
80%.
94%.
That's a bad game.
That is considered a horrible game of calling balls and strikes.
Are you supposed to be at like 98, 97?
The thing about how good that is,
yeah,
that out of the 300 pitches approximately
got
he saw.
Off, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just like that is considered a bad game.
There is.
That you got 94% of the balls. Does that make sense, Jared?
Yeah, yeah. Like, no, I'm trying to look up some numbers, but yeah.
I feel like Jared said something, though, that stuck with me, Mike, and that is that, hey, that's two players. Most of the other players probably don't want to be fully automated, and there's a level of influence you can have with a person, an umpire. You're a catcher, can build a little relationship through a game with them and start getting a little outside corner here and there. I think there is a level of influence that players like to have.
So, yeah, the accuracy this year in calling balls, 97%. Now, the accuracy for calling strikes is 88%, but the overall accuracy, to Mike's point, at 94%, that's below average. The overall accuracy is just a hair under 96%. That is what is the statistical average for umpires this season. So
yeah.
94 is, that's below average.
Yeah.
That's a bogger. Go ahead.
Did you want to talk about?
I want to talk about the Seattle Mariners real quick.
Okay,
and then Kamar Rocker.
Yeah.
The Mariners, watching them play and beating up on the Rangers when it was in Seattle and they're wearing their City Connect jerseys and the Luckers are running out against the Yankees. During that series, there was a play where I felt like, and there's multiple plays, I feel like Seattle plays the game the wrong way. I think they make a lot of mistakes they get away with or were getting away with against the Rangers. And I talked about Larry Brown, SMU, Kansas, NBA coach, and I said, you know, you always say play the game the right way. Always play the game the right way, and we'll end up, you know, luck will somewhat be on our side if we play the game the right way. I'm like, they're playing the game the wrong way, but and then all of a sudden playing the game their way, goofing off and all these things, it's immediately the karma in the Yankee series has paid off. Playing the game the wrong way, not hustling, not playing the game right, has eventually, it looks like, pushed them out of the playoffs. Julio Rodriguez?
Well, how last night, did you see that?
Yes.
Yeah,
it's tough to describe on the radio, but I would just tell people, like, Twitter, Google search or whatever, Julio Rodriguez, 10th inning. I mean, yeah, that's a perfect example of it, right?
They don't run hard to first base at times. They do things where you're just like, hey, this is just playing the game the right way. And you guys seem to want to do things the wrong way, and you get away with it a lot of times. But when you don't play it the right way in the biggest moment, all of a sudden it shows up.
So every year, every sport, there is a team or multiple teams. You look at their roster and you're like, wow, this team should be so much better, right?
Yep.
And from our perspective, it's like palms up. Like, I don't get it. I don't get Toronto, for instance. I don't get why Toronto hasn't been better over the last few years. I don't get why Seattle isn't better. But there's always a reason, right? There's always something. And I think, to your point, and it's not the same team to team. I'm not saying Toronto plays the game the wrong way.
Right.
But, yeah, you're not the only person who's shared that sentiment about Seattle. And maybe that's a big reason why, on paper, they should be so much better than what their actual record is.
I know we should probably talk about Cody Bradford from last night, and I don't mean to slight him, but What's the excitement level, the lone home start for Kamar Rocker remaining this season to see it happen?
Hey, this is what baseball needs, right? Today and tomorrow is a perfect example. The other day on the video board, they were promoting ahead to this two-game stretch of Rocker and DeGrom, and it's just a reminder, like, this is what gets you excited. A Scherzer day, back when that was a thing. DeGrom day, a Rocker, like, it's the starting pitcher is so valuable in that regard. And yes, it's super exciting having DeGrom tomorrow, but Rocker today.
I know this, in Seattle, they would give Kamar Rocker a standing ovation when he took the mound today if he was pitching for the Mariners. Do you believe these Ranger fans here understand cheering for Kamar Rocker when he takes the mound as a Texas Ranger for the first time here?
I think that the challenge is, this is school is in, right?
Yeah.
Midweek, day game, and I think that, that hurts. But, yeah, I mean, I think Rangers fans definitely, would have the wherewithal to celebrate it.
What a diplomatic answer.
Yeah,
thank you very much, Jared.
Are we on fan cam?
Jared,
yeah, I am.
You can see my enthusiasm.
I don't know if you are. We appreciate it very much, good sir. Thank you for always coming out and giving us all the info.
Glad I could wake up for you guys.
Before you go, though, or we got time
for it?
Oh,
yeah, include him. Yeah,
hey, Jared.
You got a couple minutes.
We always support what the Sandlot does, and I know you've always been supportive of us and what we do for Peace-a-thon. Today is North Texas Giving Day. How's the Sandlot approaching this today as y'all are taking part of it?
Yeah, I'll say what I always say. I would love for people to donate to the Sandlot. I'd love for people to donate to My Possibilities. I know that they got a big campaign going on, and we want Adrian to come home happy tonight.
Yeah.
I just, whether it's My Possibilities, Sandlot, whatever the organization is, there's so many amazing organizations out there. The only thing I would ask of people to do, if you've got the financial means, think of a cause or a movement or an effort that's meaningful to you and support it. The money goes a long way. If $5, $500, $5 million, I mean, if it's $5 million, definitely go to Sandlot, everything else. But it really does go a long way. It's much appreciated. North Texas Giving Day is a really cool day to celebrate all the community efforts here in North Texas.
Cause I wanted to shout out is Refugee Resources in Dallas. This is something that I do. They take kids who obviously have had to move here from other places for a variety of reasons. And they're learning English. They're learning about Jesus. It's a really wholesome volunteer organization, and so they don't have a ton of funding, but Refugee Resources in Dallas.
And I know you always love to give it up for NAMI North Texas.
North Texas, phenomenal. I have sent several people there in the last couple of weeks. People are struggling out there. NAMI North Texas is another great one for North Texas Giving Day. We have been the KNC Masterpiece. Make your way back with us tomorrow. We'll be at Buffalo Wild Wings in Frisco, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. right here on 105.3 The Fan.